Welcome to the message podcast of Catalyst Baptist Church, a vibrant church with two campuses located west of Melbourne, Australia. Dedicated to creating a welcoming and safe space for everyone to explore and grow their faith in God, our vision is to see hope multiplied within our community and around the world. We hope this podcast serves as a source of encouragement and spiritual growth for you. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to journeying with you in faith.
Well, my name's Stan. I'm actually, I have the privilege of leading you through now a few minutes looking at The Ultimate Makeover. Last week, we began this series. This is number two. If you missed the first one, you can go back and download the app, look at it in the app. Also, if you've got the app on your phone, it's the only thing you're allowed to do right now on your phone, is you can actually look at notes, and you can actually look ahead at what I'm about to say, and you can be ahead of me, and you can even finish my sentences for me. Please don't do that. Anyway, download the app, go to the website, share this content with other people, with your friends who need so desperately that ultimate makeover, and they'll be glad you did. Last week, we discovered that the ultimate makeover begins with surrender. The Apostle Paul teaching us in Romans 12 says we need to give God my body, that's what I do, give God my mind, that's what I think, and give God my will, that's the things that I choose. And he says we need to do that as a response to God's grace, to God's mercy, not as a requirement, not as a list of do's and don'ts and things that we have to keep. He's actually spent the first 11 chapters of Romans saying that's not what it's all about. So in response to God's mercy, God's grace, we give him these things. And we talked about that ultimate makeover, the transformation that's happening inside of us. There's two universal truths about renovations or transformations. They always cost more than you expect, and it takes longer than you anticipate. And people have been commiserating with me all week and sending me condolences about the renovations that are happening in my daughter and son-in-law's place, so thanks for that. But know that that's true in your life and in my life. But here's the question. How do you know the makeover is actually happening? How can you tell? You know, if you've watched The Block, you know they never reveal the whole house at the same time. They go room by room. And sometimes when you see the middle of the project, it actually looks worse than it did at the beginning. Sometimes things get harder before they get better. And then in the end, though, you're able to start noticing some change. You notice what's going on. And, you know, that's kind of a picture of the Christian life. Last week we learned that God starts changing us, or the makeover, from the inside out. And then we saw that he's renovating us from the inside. But this week we're going to be seeing that that people should actually start noticing. There should actually be something about you where people see that and they say, something's going on in that person's life. I can see a difference. They should start to see the ultimate makeover, not because we're becoming more religious, not because we know more Bible, maybe that might be part of it, but actually because they notice that we treat them differently, that it actually is affecting our relationships. Think about it. It is easy for us to think that we're growing spiritually. It's easy to sing loud and lift your hands. Well, for some of us, it's not so easy to lift our hands. You're still stuck in that space. But it's easy to know more Bible. It's easy to read another Christian book or podcast or watch more YouTube videos about certain topics about Christianity. And those things are all okay. Those things are good, but they don't prove that we're actually following Jesus any closer. Here's what I mean by that. You can fool yourself even about your own spirituality. But you know who you can't fool? It's the people closest to you. If you're married, it's your spouse. If you got kids, your kids can see it. Your workmates can see it. Your schoolmates can see it. Those closest to you usually know whether that makeover is actually happening. One time I heard John Piper speak. John Piper is an American pastor and theologian, written lots of books and everything. He's forgotten more than I'll ever know because he's so smart. But he once said that his wife, Noel, actually questions at times the reality of his faith. Not because she doesn't love him, but because she knows him. His congregation sees the preacher, but she sees the person. She sees the pride. She sees selfishness. She sees the impatience. And that's confronting, because the people closest to us actually are the first ones to notice whether the renovation is real or not. And that's exactly where Paul takes us today. Because the ultimate makeover always shows up in our relationships. That's where there's evidence that something is happening. I don't know about you, but one thing I've noticed, some of the hardest people to get along with in life are Christians. Did you ever notice that? Any non-Christian? No. Sometimes Christians are the hardest people to get along with. And if we're honest, we've all been that person. We've all met that person, but we've all been that person from time to time. We know, or they know, all the Bible verses. They win all the theological arguments and debates. They can even explain the book of Revelation to you. But nobody actually likes to be around them, right? Do you know what I'm talking about? If you don't know what I'm talking about, maybe you're that person. But they've been in church for decades, but they're critical. They complain. They're defensive. They're proud. They exhibit those types of things, and they're just not nice to be around. So that raises a question in my mind, because we all experienced that. Maybe we've all been that person. If transformation is supposed to make us look more like Jesus and behave more like Jesus, then what's wrong? What's going wrong there? And I would suggest to you that maybe we've confused knowing truth with being transformed by truth. Maybe we've replaced transformation with just information. And today Paul shows us what this transformation actually looks like. So here we go, Romans 12 and verse 3. He says, "Because of the privilege and authority God has given me, I give each of you this warning. Don't think you are better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us." Notice here, Paul doesn't start with spiritual gifts or spiritual disciplines. He doesn't even start with love. He starts somewhere completely unexpected. He says, don't think that you're better than you actually are. Have an honest evaluation of yourself. He's teaching us something here that's so valuable. It's that pride destroys relationships long before behavior ever does. Before behavior is doing its work, pride has come in. Long before conflict, long before anger, long before division, pride has set up its camp in that room. So what we need to do is simply this: give God your ego. Another way to say that for some of our international friends is, your ego is not your amigo. Okay? It's not. It's not your friend. In fact, it's the thing that puts people off. Conversely, humility changes how I see myself. If I'm behaving humbly, if I have a humble mental attitude and an honest evaluation of myself, it's going to change how I see myself. See, relationships are always going to struggle when everyone believes they are the most important person in the room. Right? Paul isn't saying to think less of yourself. He's saying, think about yourself a little bit less. And those things are different. See, humility isn't putting yourself down. It's not saying, well, I'm useless, I'm a loser, I can't do anything right, I'm no good. That's not humility. It actually might just be another way of trying to make ourselves the center of attention. I enjoy having the family around, and most of the family gatherings now I want to do on a Saturday, because I want to start early in the morning and smoke some meat, all right? And if you're not a meat eater, God bless you anyway. But it's a labor of love. And you get out there at about 5:30 in the morning and start the fire and the coals and getting it all going so that you can throw the meat on, because it's going to take all day. And it is an amazing labor of love. And then at the end of the cook, then I take it inside, and after it's set a little bit and everything, I start slicing it up, getting it ready for the family. And when I'm slicing it up, you know what I'm doing there too. I actually eat my portion before we ever get to the table. But I'm tasting that stuff, and it is so good. It's melt in your mouth good, and it's amazing. And then we start serving it, and no one says anything. Now, I've already tasted it, but nobody's saying anything. So I say, y'all, you know, I think I messed up the meat today. I'm just really no good at this smoking meat thing. Do I mean that? I just tasted it. It was good. What am I doing? I'm fishing. I'm fishing for compliments. I'm wanting people to say that stuff, right? Because I'm making it about me. See, humility isn't pretending that you don't have any gifts or you're not good at anything. It's actually being honest about who you are. Humility doesn't devalue your gifts. It's not inflated and it's not deflated. It's accurate. Honestly admitting that, yeah, you know what? I'm actually good at some things. And there's actually a lot of things you don't want me to get anywhere close to. Because that's an honest evaluation. And it's understanding that everything I have comes from God. It's by His grace. Every opportunity, every ability, every bit of influence, none of it starts with me. See, humility isn't thinking that you're amazing. And it's also not thinking that you're worthless. It's seeing yourself the way God sees you. And Jesus was the greatest example of humility. Think about Jesus for a second. He knew exactly who he was. He never doubted his authority. He never apologized for that. But he washed feet. He served children. He touched lepers. He welcomed outsiders. Humility isn't thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. We've all been a part of a group photo, right? And when that group photo comes out and we see it, what do we zoom in to look for? Everybody else? No, we're zooming in to see how we came out in that photo, right? Right? But, you know, was my hair good? Did I smile? Was I looking at the camera? You know, and that kind of thing. We did a staff retreat and we had a photo taken, and that was the photo. And a good exercise sometime, if you want to, is try to pick out who people really are. AI did this. And you know what AI did to this picture? I was blown away. Pastor Charlie looks like he's 12 years old there, okay? And he's actually older than I am. Everybody in that photo, except me, looks younger rather than older, right? I actually said, hey, can we regenerate this and tell AI it messed up? Why do I feel that way? Because pride asks, how do I look? Humility asks, how can I help? See, transformation starts when the world stops revolving around me. And when it stops revolving around you. That's when the transformation can begin. See, pride compares. Humility contributes. And that's exactly where Paul goes next. He starts talking about our gifts. But notice before he starts talking about our gifts, remember, He's dealt with our humility. He's tried to break down our ego first and foremost, because pride has an amazing ability to even turn God's gifts to us into things that are about us if we don't approach them with humility. Look what he says in verse 4. Just as our bodies have many parts, and each part has a special function, so it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. In his grace, God has given us different gifts. And then Paul goes on to list a whole range of gifts like prophecy and serving, teaching, encouragement, generosity, leadership, and mercy. The point that Paul's trying to make, though, is not about all those gifts. We try to dissect all those gifts and these lists and everything, where they other places they appear in Scripture. But the point he's making is our gifts are there for everybody else. They're not there for us. It's not about us. Last week, we learned that transformation begins with surrender. And this week, we're seeing that surrendered people serve. Surrendered people serve other people. So with that, we need to give God your gifts. Humility changes the way we look at ourselves, but humility changes how I serve other people. See, we usually focus on the gifts as the emphasis, but Paul, he's still talking about humility, because humility, or people stop asking when they're humble, they stop asking, what do I get? And they start asking, how can I help? Paul uses the body as an illustration. Now imagine this. Imagine you wake up tomorrow morning and your feet say, hey, we're not walking today. We're done with that. And your hands say, hey, I've done enough lifting. Not going to do that today. And the eyes say, I'm tired. Let the ears do the seeing. And the ears say, yeah, I'm on to it. That's just ridiculous, isn't it? Isn't that ridiculous? That's what Paul's saying here. He's saying it's the same thing as this. He says it's ridiculous because every part has a different function and every part matters. Every part matters. It has a different role. Different does not mean worse or better. Different means essential. Paul's list here is not an exhaustive list. I actually don't believe we have an exhaustive list of spiritual gifts in Scripture. And Paul's not saying, because he says if you teach, this is how you teach. He's not saying only teachers teach. He's not saying only generous people give. He's not saying only merciful people show mercy. We all do all of those things. Some people are just gifted in those things better than others. He's saying God has wired us each differently so that collectively we can all accomplish so much more together than any of us could individually. And the gifts are different. The calling is the same. Use them to serve other people. So we need to stop comparing the gifts and start using the gifts. You know, God didn't give you your gift to impress other people or to impress the church. He gave you your gifts to serve other people, to serve the church. Consumers ask, what's in it for me? Disciples ask, how can I help? There's a difference. See, your gift isn't about you. It's about making other people stronger. Paul then starts painting a picture of what transformed people look like. In Romans 12, 9 to 13, some excerpts here, he says, don't just pretend to love others. Honor each other. Serve the Lord enthusiastically. Rejoice in our confident hope. Be patient in trouble. Keep on praying. Help people in need. Practice hospitality. It's a practical list. It's actually a beautiful, beautiful list. And it's the kind of church that we all want to be a part of, where those things are happening. But then Paul's about to shift the picture, because it's one thing to love people who love you and treat you well. But it's a whole different story when we're talking about people who don't. He says this in Romans 12, verses 14, and then a few verses 17 to 21. He says, bless those who persecute you. Don't curse them. Pray that God will bless them. Live in harmony with each other. Don't be too proud to enjoy the company of ordinary people. And don't think you know it all. Never pay back evil with more evil. Do all you can to live in peace with everyone. Dear friends, never take revenge. Leave that to the righteous anger of God. Then if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. Hang on, listen to this. In doing this, you will heap burning coals of shame on their heads. Don't let evil conquer you, but conquer evil by doing good. Paul doesn't say, just don't retaliate. He calls us to something greater. He calls us to not curse, but to bless, to not get even, but to live at peace. Not to seek revenge, but to serve those people. Not to let evil win, but to overcome evil with good. Friends, he's not talking about natural things here. He's talking about supernatural things. We don't do those things in our own strength, in our own power. We have to do this. We have to give God our rights. And that humility changes how I respond to difficult people when I give up my rights. He's not just telling us to be nice. He's telling us what surrendered people look like. Anybody been driving locally around Windham lately? How about between here and Windham Vale? Oh, man. I pray for you people. I'm one of you people. What do you do when you're driving along and somebody pulls out in front of you? Say, bless them. They must have needed to get out there because it's more urgent for them to get where they're going than me. That's not what you do. You go, hey! And maybe a little toot on the horn, or maybe on the horn. I tell Deanna, I said, that was just a little toot. And she's like, oh, I'm not so sure about that. You know, we get angry, and maybe for the next 5 kilometers, we rehearse the speech that we would love to give them if we had the opportunity. And we do that because we believe we have a right to be treated better than that. Inherently, in all of us, we feel like we have certain rights. Rights to defend ourselves, the right to get even, the right to maybe have the last word, the right to stay offended, the right to make them pay. The Apostle Paul says, lay those rights on the altar. Lay those down. Set those aside. And then a lot of people really want to focus on those verses that I emphasized when I was reading. I don't know if you picked that up or not, about heaping coals of shame on someone's head. I actually think that Paul is not saying, be nice so they will suffer more. That's what we wish he was saying, because we want to heap coals of fire on them. But that would contradict everything else Paul has said up to now. The picture is that unexpected kindness can have a way of awakening a person's conscience. That actually may be more convicting for them, and it may actually change them, start their own transformation when we do that. And friends, this isn't about weakness. This isn't pretending that evil doesn't exist. This isn't about letting people walk all over you. Paul isn't saying evil doesn't matter. He's saying don't let evil determine the kind of person that you are going to be. Evil is evil, but don't let that make you evil. Transform people, surrender their rights. And again, we can't get past the person that this reminds us all of. He had every right to defend himself, every right to call down angels, every right to condemn his enemies. But instead, Jesus prayed, Father, forgive them. He conquered evil by doing good. Maybe you've been insisting on your rights. I have a right. And maybe you do. But Jesus had every right. And he set those aside for you and for me. When someone hurts you, you've got a choice to make. You can either let their evil shape you and become that person, or you can let Jesus shape your response. See, the more Jesus transforms us, the more humble we become. And then humility changes how I see myself. It changes how I serve others, and it changes how I respond to difficult people. That's what the ultimate makeover actually looks like. Last week, we discovered that the world is trying to shape us. And this week, we see that people are trying to shape us. Sometimes even people that hurt us want to shape us. Can I encourage you, don't let either one of those determine who you become. Let God do his work in you. Let Jesus determine who you become. So we're only 2 weeks in, but how is the renovation going? Not how much Bible do you know? Not how many church services have you attended? Not how many verses have you memorized? But how are your relationships? How's your relationship with your siblings, if you have them? How's your relationship with your parents, with your children, with your spouse, with that difficult person, with that person that just annoys you when they're in the room, with those difficult people? Maybe God's renovation isn't starting where you thought. Maybe today he's putting his finger on your relationships, because that, my friends, is where the ultimate makeover shows up. What's he asking you to surrender today? Is it your ego? Is it your gifts? Is it your rights? Let me encourage you that the hardest relationship in your life is often going to be revealing where God is still renovating yours. Maybe that relationship's there as a tool, as a hammer, as a saw for God to continue doing that work in you. That tough relationship that you're just hating and wishing wasn't there, maybe lean into that and say, okay, God, what do you want me to learn here? What are you teaching me here? The good news is this. God never exposes something that he doesn't intend to renovate. Imagine if Romans 12 was not just a chapter in the Bible that we believe, but it was actually a life that we live. Imagine a church where comparing gives way to contributing, where gifts strengthen others, where forgiveness wins out over offense every time. Imagine that. Where difficult people are loved instead of just tolerated. A church like that is a place where people wouldn't simply come and hear about Jesus. They would experience him. And by God's grace, I believe that's the kind of church that God is building here. Because he's transforming your life. And yours, and yours, and yours, and yours. And he's got a lot of work to do still on mine, okay? Paul's taught us a lot today. Last week, the ultimate makeover began with surrender. This week, we see that it shows up in our relationships. Because, see, following Jesus isn't just about believing differently. It's about living differently and loving differently. So this week, as you go out, maybe you're tempted to ask this question, how can I be a better Christian? That's not the right question to ask. Instead, ask, who can I make stronger? Because the transformation is showing up in your relationships. See, my friends, today, I want you to go away understanding this. that the greatest evidence that God is changing me is the way I treat you. And the greatest evidence of the way God is changing you is the way you treat the person sitting beside you, and the person sitting across the room from you, and the person that lives next door to you, and the person at the desk next to yours in the office, or that next on the line, on the manufacturing line, or the other tradies on the job sites. The greatest evidence that God is changing you is how you're treating them. Father, thank you so much that while it's painful sometimes, you do want to do a work of transformation in each and every one of us. Thank you for investing the time and energy in that. Help us, Lord, to not just be annoyed by the transformation process. It's costing us more. It's taking longer. But Lord, help us evaluate ourselves humbly, accurately. Help us to see the evidence that you're changing us by the way we're actually treating other people. Lord, may those around us be excited about what you're doing in us because they can see it. And Lord, help us all to be patient with the people around us. While you're not just transforming us, you're transforming them too. Help us to give them the same grace that you've given us. And help us, Lord, to just lean in to the work you're wanting to do. And Lord, help us to help each other, to build each other up, to make each other stronger as we give you our ego, our gifts, and our rights. May you take those and make them something that we could never imagine. In Jesus' name.